Costs to originate keep rising, even with more technology in the industry. The problem is the core platform. A new LOS can re-architect the process around data, not humans moving paper files. Vesta has built this LOS, and you can learn more at vesta.com. Welcome, everyone. My guest today is editor Chris Clow to talk about the newly formed Real Estate Caucus in Congress and what they might accomplish, as well as the latest in reverse news. Chris, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me back, Sarah. It's good to be with you.
It is always great to talk to you, and we have so much to talk about. So the first thing that I wanted to mention was we have some people in Congress paying attention to real estate in a very direct way. They formed apparently a real estate caucus. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so this is something that just kind of came through on Monday morning on May the 6th. And it's a coalition of four representatives, two Democrats and two Republicans. And they are apparently being directly supported in the creation of this bipartisan real estate caucus by 11 different trade groups, including MBA, including NAR. ALTA is in there as well, and the NAHB, and seven other ones. And they basically said they released a joint statement on Monday morning, and the representatives are Mark Alford, Republican of Mississippi, J. Lewis Correa, a Democrat of California, Tracy Mann, Republican of Kansas, and Brittany Petterson, a Democrat of Colorado. And they basically said real estate represents 16% of the U.S. gross domestic product, supports nearly 3 million jobs, generates $50 billion in tax revenue, which they say makes it necessary to establish a congressional group that's dedicated to the needs of the real estate industry. So it looks like they're probably going to be in the process of bringing additional reps on board. As far as I know, these four represent the co-chairs. So I would imagine that this is just the beginning of this new caucus. The announcement was followed very quickly by a series of different statements of support from the trade associations, including NAR and NAHB and MBA and ALTA. The National Apartment Association is in there, U.S. Mortgage Insurers, the Asian Real Estate Association of America, the National Multifamily Housing Council. So it's a pretty big swath of interested real estate associations that are kind of banging the drum for this to go forward. And I feel like this is in recognition of a lot of the moves that we've seen at the federal level when it comes to housing. You know, we at the State of the Union address, of course, President Biden outlined a series of proposals that he wants to pursue related to housing and bringing costs down and allowing more people a path to home ownership, of course. Three of the four lawmakers that are involved in this caucus have apparently worked in the real estate industry before. Representative Alford said that he worked at a real estate brokerage. He owned a small real estate business. So he says, "I know firsthand the regulatory challenges that realtors face every day." Representative Correa worked at a in the real estate business as well as a broker. And he said that his time in that business helped him see firsthand the role that real estate plays in uplifting Main Street and hardworking American taxpayers. Representative Mann has a history as a commercial real estate agent, and he attributed more of the challenges to onerous regulations right now from Washington, D.C., in addition to the high cost of materials and the construction of new homes. And as far as I know, Representative Petterson, she didn't attribute any previous experience working in the real estate industry, but she's been very involved as a lawmaker in housing and real estate issues over the past couple of years. So this is probably going to be seen as a good sign by the associations. They certainly say as much. And yeah, you've got a coalition, a bipartisan coalition of lawmakers focused on the real estate side of things.
Listen, I feel like standing up and cheering, huge to get, first of all, anything in Congress that's like focused on real estate, it's bipartisan. I feel like this could be really great for, you know, of course, you know, things, you know, things have to still grind through the system, but to have a caucus that is focused on something so important to their point, something that affects so many people, either as professionals or as consumers, the economy, I think this is a way overdue and really excited to see it actually.
Yeah, I think that there's reason to be excited about it, particularly because, you know, as we have reported over the past couple of months, voters are certainly paying attention to housing issues. You know, the fact that voters are being more vocal about the challenges that they're facing, how housing is taking up a significant share of the money that they bring home, you know, in some cases, well over the recommended like 30% threshold that people are normally supposed to be able to devote to housing, costs have gone up for a lot of average Americans, whether you're a renter or a homeowner. So the fact that you have congressional representation, you know, ostensibly for the industry, but the idea, I think, is just to pursue an eye toward affordability, as a lot of lawmakers have said over the past several months, this is going to be an issue of prominence this cycle. I would imagine it's going to be most potent on the congressional side of the equation. Both chambers are up for control this fall, and housing seems to be an issue that is increasingly resonant with a large swath of the electorate. So the fact that you have lawmakers who are representing the importance of that issue, potentially in helping to determine what the balance of power is going to be in the next Congress, I think that says a lot. So this bipartisan recognition should be seen as a win. You know, all of these members are also up for re-election. I don't know if they're necessarily in danger of losing, but you never know, of course. But we'll certainly have to see how this coalesces once we're on the other side of the election and we see who's in control of the White House and of Congress.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
In some ways, it points to the challenging environment for everyone in real estate, whether you are a consumer trying to buy or you're trying to, you know, you're a professional working in this, because if everything was going super smooth, what would be, you know, what would be the impetus to have this, to have a need for this? And so, you know, it's something that you and I've talked about. I've talked about with James Clyman and Logan Motoshami, is at what point do these challenges bubble up to Main Street enough that we have federal action? Because of course, you know, so much of real estate is local, but then, you know, you have tons of things that the federal government does do on real estate. And we could, you know, the next thing we're going to talk about is appraisals. So, you know, they control many parts of the real estate transaction process through different, you know, through regulation, through legislation, whatever. But I think it is very interesting and super timely that it has finally bubbled up to now. It's like, okay, we in Congress need to at least be seen doing something on this issue. And to your point, I think affordability is right there. I also think, you know, with all the commission lawsuits, it's been front and center now for 6 months. Every day we just published another story about another settlement. And so it's really in the American imagination and in their daily lives in a way that it wasn't before.
Absolutely. And I mean, to your point about at the very least, at the bare minimum, the appearance of doing something, I mean, that's really critical, because I would imagine it's likely that your average American voter does not necessarily understand that Congress's ability to impact things at the local level, when it comes to real estate, their hands are pretty tied. You know, it comes down to like zoning laws are a big topic of conversation at the local county and state levels, and we've seen a lot of different actions related to opening up zoning laws to allow for more single and multifamily construction. But that doesn't necessarily mean that voters are going to be satisfied if their federal representative comes back and says, well, there's nothing I can do, especially when there's an election on the horizon that has a fair amount of implication for how the next couple of years are going to go. Voters don't want to hear, I can't do anything. Voters want to hear how a lawmaker is working to help them. And by doing something and by examining the ins and outs of how the real estate industry and larger real estate transactions are affected and what federal lawmakers can do, I'm sure that this is going to be a generally positive step, if for no other reason than to just bring more attention to the intricacies of real estate issues as it interacts with different jurisdictions. So yeah, this will be really fascinating to see over the next several months.
Well, and if you're the trade groups, obviously, I'm sure they were instrumental in making this happen, in either the idea or actually coming to fruition. It's so much easier and better for them to have a block, to have a caucus that they can go to that is identified and is bipartisan, most importantly, to really, you know, have conversations with it and you know, get on the same page with, support, you know, funnel things through. It's just from an organizational standpoint, a big win that I can see for them to have an actual real estate caucus. And even better that people in the caucus have done this as a profession. So, you know, it's not like, oh, we have some academics who have some thoughts about it, which I love academics. That's great. These are people who've actually made a living from real estate, which I feel like if I was in the industry, I would be really encouraged by that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fact that they have real lived experience in these kinds of professions, particularly as the topic of housing has taken up so much more oxygen in political conversations over the past several months, I would think that that would be kind of an essential quality for these co-chairs to have as they continue to pursue different real estate related issues and mortgage related issues, of course. So, and there's a lot of proposed policy that's coming down the pike from major federal housing agencies, you know, not the least of which being HUD and FHA and FHFA and Ginnie Mae. I mean, housing is such an order of the day for these current political conversations, and to have a caucus that is focused on those issues, hopefully it will yield meaningful results. You know, Congress is kind of hard to tell whether or not that'll be the case, but having this caucus is certainly going to potentially yield more optimal outcomes than not having it would.
Could not agree more. Speaking of trade groups, federal action, we had the MBA, which you mentioned earlier, Mortgage Bankers Association, and the Housing Policy Council, you know, teaming up to urge leaders at the VA to delay a mandatory compliance date with the Veteran Affairs Servicing Purchase Program, right? So tell us a little bit about that. That might be a little bit in the weeds for people. So if you could tell us what that means and what that looks like, that'd be great.
Sure. Yeah. So this is something that both Flavia Furlan-Nunez and I have reported on in the past. The VA servicing purchase program would allow the Department of Veterans Affairs to purchase defaulted loans from mortgage servicers and potentially to ultimately modify them and place them in the VA-owned portfolio as direct loans. A lot of this stems from the fact that there are a lot of veterans who are continuing to experience financial hardships due in no small part to the ongoing economic consequences of the COVID-19 pandemic. But the issue for MBA and HPC in particular was that the mandatory compliance date for servicers to get in line with this new program would be May 31st. That's just a few weeks away. And these associations are saying that we need more time, basically. There's a lot of operational questions that remain outstanding, and there are significant questions about whether the VA, they said, or any servicer will be ready to deploy this VA servicing purchase program until much later than the May 31st date. So they're basically making two requests, they being the MBA and the HPC. They want expectations of veterans to be clearly set by publicly communicating that servicers and the VA are working to quickly adjust existing operations to support the new program before the compliance deadline comes, which they think should be reset based on the guidance publication date. They want to communicate that servicers are going to aim to implement the VASP program as soon as possible, but that servicers must have until a date certain, preferably 6 months from the final publication of the guidance, to execute the program that will include a new loss mitigation waterfall. So the basic premise is that it's not fair to either veterans or servicers to create this public expectation that the purchase program is going to be available before May 31st of this year. So the second thing that they're requesting is for the mandatory obligation date to go beyond October the 1st, and that would allow the involved parties to adjust the program's requirements. They said, considering the guidance that remains outstanding and in light of the time it will take the VA and servicers to effectively implement the VASP, we support an extension of the voluntary foreclosure moratorium to align with the effective date for eligible borrowers. And they also made sure to specify that they support the program. MBA and HPC both are in support of the VASP program. They don't want to see it taken away, but there's just not been enough guidance in terms of how to implement it. And they feel like mortgage servicers could be caught at a severe disadvantage. And, you know, consequently, borrowers will be at a severe disadvantage if servicers can't implement everything on the current timeline. So we'll see how this shakes out. The VASP program, it seems like, you know, it's kind of a concerted effort by the executive director of the VA's Loan Guarantee Service and the undersecretary for benefits at the Veterans Benefits Administration to get this relief out there to impacted veterans. But without the proper timeline, these associations say, it's decreasing the chance of success.
Man, there's so much going on. And especially, you know, you think about the VA borrowers, right? Whether the would-be borrowers who are now facing some interesting times when it comes to the commission lawsuits and how they are going to be able to pay their buyer brokers, their agents that represent them, to everything to this. So the good news is I feel like on the mortgage side and the real estate side, there is a real desire to help veterans get into homes. It's something that, you know, people take very seriously and generally jump on and figure out what they can do. But interesting that to see them, you know, ask for an extension here.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, veterans are unfortunately a cohort that that seem to exhibit certain financial vulnerability. Obviously, you know, their health needs often can be severe. So having this program in place that is designed to take into account the additional financial strain that the pandemic continues to create in a lot of vulnerable populations in particular, it certainly seems like a step in the right direction. That being said, there is probably a reasonable issue to take with the implementation timeline. So we'll see how long it's actually going to be before things come back into the fold and these issues are addressed. But I'm sure that veterans are going to be paying very close attention to once this program is up and running, because for a lot of people who may live on a fixed income, you know, a mortgage payment can be a serious contributor to how you structure a household budget in particular. So any relief programs are going to be welcomed by the cohort.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Absolutely. So, you know, Chris, you wear a lot of hats at Housing Wire, which we so appreciate. And all of our reporters have multiple beats. And so in addition to the federal beat, which, you know, we've kind of talked about those things. So that's anything that happens in D.C., which right there covers a huge amount. You and Flavia split that beat. You also do almost all our reverse coverage. And I feel like there's been a lot of reverse mortgage news lately, like a lot of things popping and bubbling, and it just maybe a more renewed interest in reverse from not only just like, you know, consumers, but also lenders. When we were at the gathering, we had several sessions back to back where forward lenders were talking about reverse.
Yeah, it was a really interesting thing to observe, because there wasn't, we didn't have like specifically dedicated reverse programming outside of one or two instances, but the topic just came up naturally. You know, I covered recently some of what Andrew Pullman from Guaranteed Rate had to say about the reverse mortgage program. Terry Schmidt at Guild, of course, spoke about her company's renewed efforts in reverse after the acquisition of Cherry Creek Mortgage, which is a very well-developed reverse mortgage operation. And it seems like the potential for serving that demographic in particular is way more on the minds of these forward companies lately. Kristen Seifert, of course, of Finance of America, was on site at the gathering and spoke to the crowd there about the potential partnership opportunities. She was able to connect with a fair amount of other people on site to talk about the potential for partnering with reverse mortgage companies in the industry at large, and I'm sure FAR in particular, of course. But it is pretty interesting to see how much more discussion there is about reverse, and a lot of it just tends to the demographics. The realities of the demographics show that there could be a real opportunity here that is as yet unrealized on that side of the business. So it's not too surprising that there's at least interest being expressed, but what is surprising, I think, is just like the dedication with which these companies seem to be pursuing the reverse mortgage topic. But you're right. I mean, just in terms of things that are happening in the reverse space, we have a couple of earnings calls this week for major reverse players. We had Ocwen present its earnings last week, and they seem to be just as bullish on the reverse side of their business as they've been for the past couple of years. Finance of America, it was announced this morning, is unifying their reverse mortgage branding just under the Finance of America name. I got to talk to the Finance of America Chief Marketing Officer, Chris Moschner, about that, and that is available now on Reverse Mortgage Daily at Housing Wire. And then, you know, we also have Finance of America's own earnings coming soon, new reverse mortgage volume data. It seems like volume has picked up a bit, which should be encouraging for the industry. Securitization volume is always a hot topic of conversation. The regulatory side of things, you know, there's an ongoing lawsuit related to the securitization side that we're keeping an eye on. A law was recently passed in Massachusetts that permanently allows for remote reverse mortgage counseling, which was a 14-year odyssey to get that over the finish line. So there's certainly no shortage of things to keep track of in the reverse space in particular. And that's what we're trying to do over at RMD at Housing Wire.
Absolutely. And that, you know, that remote counseling thing, I remember that was so huge in the pandemic. It's like the very demographic yeah. that could, you know, benefit from reverse mortgages at that time, like really didn't need to be around everybody during COVID. And so, you know, but even then it was like pulling teeth.
Yeah. Early on in the pandemic was probably the most disruptive, because Massachusetts was unique in the country in that it was the only state that required reverse mortgage counseling to take place in person. Prior to the pandemic, that was still a challenge, just because there's only a handful of HUD-approved counselors who can offer counseling for the reverse mortgage program within the state. So depending on the location of a borrower who's applying for a HECM loan, a counselor or the borrower themselves might have to travel an inordinate distance to be able to get their counseling certificate. And then when you combine that with the effects of the pandemic, reverse mortgage business effectively shut down for a little while in Massachusetts until legislators in the state were able to get these temporary exceptions to allow for remote counseling. But that also illustrated, it seemed, the utility of being able to do remote counseling, which every other state can do. And it was a really long process for people on the ground in the state, supporting associations, including the Massachusetts Mortgage Bankers Association and members of the National Reverse Mortgage Lenders Association, all sort of coming together to figuring out how to get a permanent exception over the finish line. And they were finally able to do that, with language allowing for such an exception being added to a supplemental budget bill. So we'll probably have some more details on that on RMD soon, just about the full journey. I've been able to talk to two of the leading reverse mortgage industry professionals who were able to do a lot of work that led to this point, George Downey and Brett Kirkpatrick, who are also members of NIRMLA. But it's a fascinating story, and at least until another issue could come up that might reauthorize in-person counseling, which doesn't look likely, but you never know. There is this permanent exception now in Massachusetts. So I know several people in that state within the reverse business are breathing a pretty big sigh of relief.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for, you know, updating the audience on what's happening in DC and in different, you know, in different verticals like reverse and in different states. Really appreciate the coverage. Would tell all our listeners you can find all of this on housingwire.com. If you click the reverse tab at the top of the page, all the reverse coverage is there. And then obviously, you know, Chris's other work is available under mortgage or real estate on the homepage. So, Chris, thank you. We will talk to you again soon, I'm sure.
Thank you very much for having me, Sarah. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to take a minute to rate the show and leave a comment. And make sure to tune in tomorrow for more news and insight.